What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Tomatoito Boxing Show, and let's jump into another big event that took place this past Saturday, which was headlined by super middleweight WBA world champ, not the super champ. The super champ at 168 happens to be none other than Canelo Alvarez, who is still sitting atop the division. But David Morrell holds the WBA's world title, which is basically knocking on the door of Canelo. Now, David Morrell headlined the event against Sina Agbeko, and this was the farewell show for Showtime Boxing. Now, several years back, we gave our farewell to HBO, and the last show took place for HBO, and now Showtime is joining them, exiting the boxing business. And this was their farewell card. It was in Minneapolis, Minnesota at the Armory. The Armory has basically opened its arms to David Morrell, and David Morrell has made it its home. He's fought there several times now, and the crowds show up for him. David Morrell ended up closing out the show, and we'll get into David Morrell here in just a few seconds. Let's just talk about the rest of the cards. Former 140-pound, or the rest of the fights that took place, or of more note on this card, because it was a PBC card, and it was PBC's final card with Showtime. It was Showtime's final card with boxing, as I just mentioned. So they stacked it. They had about 10 fights or so on the card. A lot of up-and-coming fighters, a lot of movement amongst the numerous divisions that were represented on the card. One of the more notable ones was Alberto Puello, who's back on the winning column. He ended up beating Hector Madera. He ends up winning by unanimous decision. Alberto Puello was, of course, he's a former 140-pound champ. From there, we had a fan-favorite fight, nostalgic one at that. One that didn't really have any meaning, any repercussions, I guess, or any, it wasn't going to cause any shakeup to the welterweight division. But this was two former champions who were at the top of the division in their heyday, which was the late 2000s and early 2010s, leading maybe their last meaningful fights were about between 2013 and 2015, 2016 at that. Fun fighters who created a lot of highlights and a lot of memories for us boxing fans when they were atop the division and they were fighting one another. These two fighters that I'm talking about, of course, were Robert the Ghost Guerrero and Andre Berto. Andre Berto had those famous fights with Victor Ortiz. This is one of the top fights that he had against Robert Guerrero, and it's one apparently that was a chip on his shoulder for 11 years. This fight was 11 years in the making, the rematch. He lost to Robert Guerrero, and once again, Andre Berto drops the nod to the Ghost. Robert Guerrero ends up outpointing him. Like I said, this was just a nostalgic fight, a fun fight, a fan favorite type fight. Nothing that was going to shake up the welterweight division. Decent fight by both. Obviously, you could see that they're not at the top of their game. This should be the farewell for Andre Berto, whereas it should be the farewell for Robert the Ghost Guerrero as well. But he actually felt really good at the end, and he ended up making the comment that he may very well start pursuing and continuing his career, maybe doing one final run at a title once again. So it was a 10-round fight. Robert Guerrero was just a better fighter. He was just a better fighter. Outboxed Andre Berto, outlanded him. Although Berto had some highlight punches there, here and there, but it was too far in between and too few. Robert Guerrero ended up beating him, getting the unanimous decision win, 10-round fight. Then we move on to the co-main, which was a rematch. This fight ended up taking place on the undercard of Benavidez and Caleb Plant earlier in the year. It was such a tight fight, and there was such disdain between these two fighters in the lead-up to the first fight and during the fight and after the fight. And since then, they've been at each other's throats, and the rematch ends up getting signed. It couldn't have been any better. That match delivered. That was a knockout of the night. Rayo Valenzuela, Jose Valenzuela, who has losses to Edwin de los Santos, who recently fought Shakur Stevenson, and he was stopped against de los Santos, and he holds a decision loss to Chris Colbert. He avenged that loss. And that's what we love to see on these rematches. This one does shake up the division quite a bit. They both fight at 135, of course. Chris Colbert has always been calling out for Shakur, trying to get that fight with Shakur, dating back to the 126 days, then 130. Shakur moved up. Now, this fight with the win here against Rayo Valenzuela, he would have been a step closer to get into that Shakur fight. He got knocked out. He got flatlined. Dropped face first on the side of the ring. Just out. It took a while to get him back up. Rayo Valenzuela with the knockout of the night and the performance of the night. He avenges that loss. And now he's calling for Edwin de los Santos. He wants to go avenge that loss that Edwin holds over him. He knocks out Chris Colbert. If you remember in the press conference leading up to the fight, these two, Colbert and Rayo, end up putting a $50,000 wager as to who was going to beat who. At the conclusion of the fight, Colbert is still wobbly, still shaken up, still not to his full senses. Jim Gray is interviewing Rayo Valenzuela. Colbert walks up. Rayo congratulates him, and Colbert says, "We're going to do this again. We're going to run it back for a trilogy fight." They each hold a nod over one another, Colbert with the decision over Rayo earlier in the year, and Rayo with the knockout stoppage over Colbert now. So they're one apiece. If they run it back, it should be a headline of its own. It should be the main event. With a solid undercard, of course, these two could definitely put some butts in seats because they got that rivalry, they got the story, they got the drama between the two, and the highlights to back up what would be an incredible third fight between the two. Rayo Valenzuela with the sixth round knockout stops Chris Colbert, and then as Colbert is asking for that third fight and Rayo's being a gentleman to him, he tells him, "Hey, just have a happy holiday season with your family and disregard the 50K. He let go of that wager, and it was just for hype. So that was really nice of him. A lot of people are upset with Rayo because he ended up posing as next to Chris Colbert after he knocked him out. But he was just excited, you know, like it's I didn't see any major disrespect there, but he was just excited. It was just something that he didn't expect, but he was landing those heavy punches, that heavy leather on Colbert. Colbert's guard being down, and eventually one of those was going to get through. This one, he ended up lunging forward with the right and just popped his chin, just popped the neck, whiplashed it, and spun him down. I didn't see any major insult to it or any unsportsmanlike other than him just celebrating for himself. But again, listen, you can hold me to it because there's been some where I have been like, dang, that was in really bad taste that they did that. This one, I didn't think it was in bad taste. Some people felt it was. Nonetheless, the gentleman moved by Rayo that he ended up relinquishing that 50K, just telling him, "Hey, just you deserve it. Just keep it and enjoy your holiday season." That was the performance, the fight of the night, the knockout of the night. That was the highlight, which was a perfect setup for the main event. And here we go. David Morrell, Senna Agbeko. There was a little hatred between the two, or a little story between the two. History, I guess I should say, where earlier in the year, Senna Agbeko felt like he was wronged during the negotiations and in the lead up to what should have been his fight earlier in 2023 against Morrell, and he feels that he was wronged. He finally got the opportunity to get back in there with them. And based on that, it seemed almost the narrative on behalf of Agbeko that as if David Morrell was trying to stay away from him. David Morrell, confident as always. They went back and forth during the press conference, during the lead up, during the weigh-ins, and David Morrell just handles his business, as always. It took two rounds for him to stop Agbeko. He was too big, too fast, too strong, too much everything for Senna Agbeko. Agbeko had no business there. At the conclusion of the fight, Agbeko ends up saying that he's going to go back down to 160 and continue his career and campaign there as a middleweight, whereas Morel improves to 10-0 and continues to hold the WBA world title to Canelo's WBA super title. I guess he's the super champion, Canelo is. They all have these, every organization, too many belts. Let's just say it like it is. It's too many belts. Too many champions, too many belts. It's hard. It's confusing. Nonetheless, the way I see this is that David Morrell basically holds the interim to Canelo, similar to what David Benavidez is doing with the WBC. He's holding that interim to Canelo's WBC main title. Canelo's the undisputed at 168. Now, David Morrell continues to call out David Benavidez. He's been doing so for approximately a year. He's asked to get into a fight with Canelo when he had 8 fights in. Canelo laughed at it on one of the interviews where he said, this guy doesn't even have 10 fights and he's trying to fight me already. He's like, everybody wants a payday. Similar to that of Andrade. If we look at David Morrell with that WBA world title, I said it in prior episodes where him and David Benavidez seem to sit atop the division where it used to be Caleb Plant, BJ Saunders, but they've been eliminated by Canelo. Now, Caleb Plant, to me, is still one of the top dogs at 168. He holds losses to Canelo, and he holds a loss to David Benavidez. He still, to me, Caleb Plant is the top dog, and he's probably going to be the gatekeeper. If not, he should be knocking on the door of a title. If Canelo ever vacates, if Canelo retires, I definitely see Caleb Plant getting his hands around his old IBF title or his hands around one of the titles. I don't think David Morrell and Caleb Plant should happen yet. I think Caleb Plant is a really, really good boxer. I think Caleb Plant just ran into those situations against two heavy-handed power punchers, such as Canelo, who deteriorated Caleb Plant throughout the fight, wore him down with body shots, and David Benavidez, who just outpowered him, just too much power and smothering type of attack that he endured on behalf of David Benavidez. Even though Caleb Plant was boxing him really well, again, the wear and tear, and eventually it was too smothering, too much, on behalf of Benavidez, and Caleb Plant succumbed to the damage and the onslaught. Now, I think Caleb Plant would be too much for David Morrell. But there's other fighters that I would like to see David Morrell as. He's 10-0 now. He still holds around that. He still has that title around his waist. And there's other fighters that I want to see him face off against. Of course, Canelo Alvarez sits atop the division right now. David Benavidez is going back and forth with the WBC, trying to figure out and put pressure on the commission and put pressure on the sanctioning body or the sanctioning bodies to put pressure on commissions and on Canelo's management and Canelo himself as to getting that fight made this coming year in 2024 or to pressure him into vacating the title, what have you. Now, David Benavidez continues to put that pressure. Those two fighters are going to be pretty much tied down. After the last fight with Benavidez and Andre, during that recap episode, you heard me mention Demetrius Andre, to me, has no business. Unless he can't make middleweight, he has no business campaigning at super middleweight. He needs to go back, in my opinion, to 160, where he could actually have an effect on the division, potentially get his hand raised against a Janibek and lift those titles, get his old title back, and Janibek is a unified champ at 160 right now. I really think Andrade could beat Erislandi Lara, who's an older fighter now in the latter stages of his career. I think Demetrius Andrade could beat Janibek. I think it'd be a really good fight. But we saw Demetrius' spirited effort on behalf of Andrade against David Benavidez, and we hadn't seen him in that type of in those type of waters yet. We hadn't really seen him challenged to that level. To which, yes, you could say he failed the test, but look at who he lost against. There's no other Benavidez at 160, and Janabek does tend to get hit a lot, even though he does possess power and he's very accurate with his punching. I really think that Andre would pose problems to him. He's too small for, in my opinion, for 168. Regardless of the weight, right? They make weight, but he seemed way smaller than Benavidez, in my opinion, and seemed fairly even with Demond Nicholson, who was his introduction into 168. Demond, of course, bounces between 160, 168, as he campaigns in both, or has campaigned in both divisions. I say Andre goes back to 168. That eliminates him from a fight with Morel, in my opinion. I think Morel, who's calling for a Caleb Plant, he's calling for Benavidez for over a year. He's calling for the top dogs. He has a few more fights, in my opinion, and there's perfect opponents for him. The ones that everybody pays attention to, like Edgar Berlanga, those are just promotional companies, especially now that he's with Matchroom. Eddie Hearn's trying to push him, of course, into a big showdown with Canelo, should he win three or four major fights. But then you look at Edgar Berlanga and look at who he's going to face. He's set to face against Pedraj McCrory, I believe is his name. He is a older fighter, 35-year-old fighter, out of Belfast, Northern Ireland. He has an 18-0 record. But again, he's ranked in pretty much any sanctioning body that you look at. He's ranked beneath Berlanga. So is Berlanga really stepping up? Yeah, by record on paper, this guy's 18-0, but he's an older fighter. Berlanga's a young fighter. He's a young gun. He's supposed to be just eliminating opponents left and right. And now look, the moment that they stepped him up in competition, he started crumbling down. Pressure started getting to him. So, again, he's not really stepping up. Pedraj McCrory may very well beat Berlanga. I want to see Berlanga start taking on fighters such as Jesse Hart or such as Diego Pacheco. Such as the bully, Bektemir, who was knocked out by Gay Rosado. Bektemir avenged that loss and basically sent Gabe Rosado into retirement. Of course, Gabe had a long storied career as well, but that was basically it for Gabe Rosado. That's what he decided to call it after that fight. Gabe Rosado, to his credit, ended up giving Jaime Munguia, who's another one of these names like Edgar Berlanga, I hold them aside from these main guys that we're talking about at 168. Jaime Munguia is another guy that continues to get prepped and prepped and prepped and prepped and prepped and built up and built up and built up, and then nothing happens. Well, he's slated to take on John Ryder at the end of January. John Ryder, the last super middleweight that Canelo faced, that was his last mandatory, John Ryder, for the WBO title, the last super middleweight that he faced. That was out in Mexico, and it was a hell of a fight. He gave a hell of a fight to Canelo. Canelo won the fight, but what a spirited effort on behalf of John Ryder, with a busted nose and busted up and bloodied, and he kept coming. He got dropped, and he kept coming and coming and coming and just taking the fight to Canelo. As of this episode, I'm leaning towards John Ryder pulling off the upset against Jaime Munguia. And the upset to the people that are hyping up Jaime Munguia, they're going to be upset. Because when you're looking at John Ryder and the threat that he possesses and the way he fights, it wouldn't really be an upset. I think he's going to best Jaime Munguia. Now, I'm not down on Jaime Munguia. Jaime Munguia has taken numerous tests. His last test, many thought that he lost against Sergey Deverychenko, including me. I thought that Deverychenko did enough to have deserved a decision win. Apparently, the judges ended up giving the decision to Munguia. And the fact that he dropped Deverychenko towards the end, in the latter part of the fight, I believe it was actually in the 12th round, down the stretch, he drops Deverychenko, and that seemed to have given Munguia the edge. I have no problem with that. But it was such a tough test for Munguia, and one that, if I recall, and if I'm recalling the correct round, I believe that it was around the fourth or fifth round where I thought that Deverychenko was actually going to knock out Munguia, and Munguia looked like he was out on his feet. You got to give Munguia credit, where most fighters would have taken a knee, or most fighters would have quit. Most fighters would have, the corners would have thrown in the towel. He didn't. He fought through. Eric Morales urged him on, and he regathered himself, and he continued to fight and took the fight to Devereaux-Chenko. It was a really, really good fight. A really crazy back-and-forth slugfest between those two. But I still hold Munguia aside, similar to Berlanga. I'm still not fully decided on them. If he beats John Ryder and beats him in impressive fashion, how do you deny Jaime Munguia from being one of the top dogs at 168? Because John Ryder is that good, in my opinion, especially after that performance that I witnessed that he put on against Canelo. So David Morrell needs to fight, if Munguia and Ryder are busy, Berlanga is busy, and they're never going to put Berlanga against the David Morrell. Let's just get that out of the way. I want to see David Morrell against the bully. Face Morrell against Bektimir Melikusiev, the bully. That would be a really tough fight for him. What about Russian fighter Vladimir Shishkin? Vladimir Shishkin fights out of Florida. Should be an easy fight to make. He sits with 15-0 record. Morrell's 10-0. That would be a fun fight to make. What about Sergey Devereaux-Chenko? Take on him. There's another fun fighter who is based out of France. He's a Cameroon native, based out of France, Christian Mbili. He has names like Carlos Gongora in his resume now. He has, who else? Demond Nichols, who ended up giving the welcoming. He was the introduction to 168 for Demetrius Andrade. Christian Mbili has victories over them. Gongora, if you remember, used to be an IBO champion. And a lot of people ignore that IBO title and consider it maybe the fifth most important sanctioning body title. The main ones, of course, WBA, WBO, WBC, IBF. And not in that order. Everybody considers it in different orders. The WBC seems to have the most storied past. The IBO has been held by such big names such as Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather, Anthony Joshua, more recently Alexander Usyk. On the women's side, Katie Taylor, Triple G. So big names of note that have had that title around their waist, but it's not one of the four major sanctioning bodies. They're independent. The IBO champion for 168 used to be Lerone Richards. Carlos Gongora lifted it. Christian Mbili has victories over them. But the IBO champion at the moment is another Cuban fighter who fights out of Germany, but still represents Cuba. Similar pedigree and similar style to that of David Morrell. And his name is Osleys Iglesias. He has a 9-0 record with a lesser-known title, the IBO title. David Morrell is 10-0 with the WBA world title. That's the fight that needs to make. That's the one that needs to happen. Two fighters, up and coming, reaching their prime, their peak, continue to get better. Cuban-born and raised fighters with Cuban boxing pedigree. One based out of Minneapolis, the other one based out of Germany. That's a fight I want to see David Morrell take on. If I could see David Morrell fight Osleys Iglesias, he would level up should he be successful in that fight. If not, we would have a new superstar in Osleys Iglesias, having defeated and dethroned David Morrell. Vladimir Shishkin would be a great fight for David Morrell. The bully, Diego Pacheco, the tall, lanky, hard-hitting Diego Pacheco, would be a tough, tough fight for David Morrell, and one that I would deem a 50-50 fight. Those guys are coming up. And what we don't want to see is the continued, even though it's not happening to a major extent right now, we still see some fighters putting that, especially within the PBC, putting that Mayweather approach, the Leonard Ellerbe approach of low risk, high reward. Fight lesser known fighters, continue to look great, continue to put knockouts together, and continue to say that you're the best, and proclaim that you're the best, when you're really not fighting anybody of note. More recently, we just witnessed the self-proclaimed boogeyman, the self-proclaimed most avoided fighter, and you had every which podcast and channel just run off with that narrative and sell it. That being Demetrius Andrade. Biggest test of his career, came up short. That's the fight he needed to win to send shivers down everybody's spine across the boxing world. He came up short. That's how good David Benavidez is. Those are the fighters I want to see David Morrell fight at least two or three more times. This 2024 should be an active year for him. Instead of having two fights a year, he needs to have four fights a year. Get him in there with Christian Mbili. Get him in there with The Bully. Get him in there with Oslis Iglesias. Meanwhile, let everybody else battle it out. Munguia beats John Ryder. John Ryder beats Munguia. Well, guess what? Then there's going to be a Caleb Plant for those guys, but they're right there at that level already. Caleb Plant and Morrell would be a fun fight, but I actually favor Caleb Plant at the moment. Too much experience. Maybe in three or four fights. Maybe to close out 2024, around this time 2024, next year, maybe we could have a Caleb Plant, David Morrell show. Meanwhile, Morrell and Oslis Iglesias would be rough. Look up Oslis Iglesias. You guys will like what you see. The Bully. Who else? I mean, Vladimir Shishkin is a power puncher, similar to what Andre Fonfora used to be. Sergey Dvorichenko. I mean, come on. There's too many names right now and too many tough opponents that are still looming the 168 right now, trying to climb up, similar to what he's doing. Yes, he's got a title, but he's got a version of a title that the undisputed champ still holds, that still has a stranglehold over, that being Canelo. If he gets the Benavidez fight, I think Benavidez is going to be too much for him, because it's not going to be a Senna Agbeko. It's not going to be a two-round fight. It's not going to be a six-round fight. It's going to be a 12-round fight. And around round 9, round 10, those shark-infested waters are going to start being, or start going to presenting themselves. And that's when we start seeing if Morrell was in matched too soon in his career. And it could potentially be a detriment to his entire career going forward. How does he bounce back from a loss like that? And then if he takes another loss, he starts dropping in the rankings and just being forgotten about. He's in a great spot right now. Keep taking up on all these other guys that are looming. And continue to improve, continue to look great. One thing is for sure, Morrell continues to be consistent as far as his improvement, perform consistently, continues to look impressive. And the sky's the limit for David Morrell. The big paydays will come. There's a lot of decent names that he could face off against, that he could put on amazing performances where it's going to be inevitable for anybody to try to ignore him. It's going to be a no-brainer for people to just get him into a big mega fight if he continues to do what he's doing in the fashion in which he's doing it. But now, opposition needs to get a little harder. Hopefully he gets one of those names that I mentioned. Devereaux would be great for him. The Bully would be great for him. Oslis Iglesias, 9-0 versus 10-0 with two titles on the line, even though they're lesser recognized titles, but two titles on the line. There's even another one that comes to mind, another Cuban fighter who is based out of Germany, and he actually represents Germany instead of Cuba. His name is Yuel Hernandez. He sits at 17-1, and he's knocking on the door of David Morrell. He holds the gold version to the WBA title, meaning he's going to be getting in line to challenge for that world title and eventually become the mandatory for the super champion. That would be another great fighter, 17-1, Yuel Hernandez, another fighter who is a Cuban-based or a Cuban-born fighter, Cuban native, but he's adopted more of the European style. If you watch him, he's adopted more of that Arthur Abraham style or even the Felix Sturm type of fight. Not so much the Cuban pedigree, such as Oslis and David Morrell possess and continue to put to practice. Andy Cruz, another Cuban fighter that we're seeing out there, who's got that Olympic Cuban amateur style pedigree. Great things from David Morrell, second round knockout of Sena Egbeko. Great way to close out the year. Great headlining event, great fight to close out and farewell Showtime, send Showtime out into the sunset, riding off into the sunset. Here we go, 2024. I can't wait to see how his career continues to develop. I want to see him against some bigger names, such as the ones that I've mentioned here on this episode. Rayo Valenzuela, I hope he gets that fight with Edwin de los Santos and avenges that loss, because now you start building these rivalries. He's calling for Gervonta already, and he's been calling for Tank for a while. I think he's going to get stopped by Tank. I think he needs to get that trilogy with Colbert immediately, or he needs to go avenge Edwin de los Santos. Edwin needs a little more excitement to add to his resume and to his career after a dull performance such as the one that he had against Shakur Stevenson last month. So again, it's a pleasure speaking with you all. Thank you all for continuing to tune in. Thank you all for all the love. And there's one more fight that we're going to cover before we head into the day of reckoning and we start breaking down what's going to be a big weekend for Riyadh season for Saudi Arabia. The day of reckoning full of heavyweights, and Dimitri Bivol's also light heavyweight who's going to be active against Lyndon Arthur. We'll cover that down the line. Next up, we're going to talk about Jake Paul. Somebody who I really haven't put any attention to or have dedicated any episodes to, but I think we're getting to the point where it may be necessary to break down, and you may be surprised at what I have to say concerning his career. So stay tuned for that one. That'll be next up. And then we'll start breaking down this big weekend that's going to be the day of reckoning to close out 2023. And then from there, we're days away, looming from just days away from Naoya potentially recreating what he did last year and becoming undisputed at 118. Now he's looking to become undisputed against Marlon Tapales in a few days' time at 122. So a couple more episodes coming your way as we close out 2023. David Morrell, congratulations. Showtime, thank you for all the memories. And to you all, thank you for tuning in. Have yourselves a great night. I'm Hekali. This is the Tomatodito Boxing Show.